Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts.
Imagine talking on air with underrepresented communities,
reviewing movies,
or even singing live karaoke. In case you're wondering, anyone is eligible.
And as you can tell, the possibilities are endless.
If you're interested, please email us at programming@kdvs.org.
Good afternoon, strugglers. Oh,
good afternoon. I'm Micah.
I'm DJ Drainfield.
And this is Book It. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California.
Can we turn the background a little down? I feel like it's a little too loud. Yeah. I think that's better.
I feel like I always do that on every show.
No, it's okay.
Background music's a little too loud.
Here, I'm going to turn us up a little bit as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
I will also say the thing, your headphones over there, I feel like it's always a little wonky.
No, I know mine are great, but...
On that side.
Yeah. I know.
But yeah, no, it's Book It. Best show at KDVS, honestly.
Book review show.
Book
we review
show.
Book.
Yeah, it's true. We review book. What's this week's book?
I think you should actually intro this week's book now that I think about
okay.
it.
Okay. This week... We read Sun and Steel by Yukio Mishima, one of my picks. I think we're reading three Mishima books in total, right?
Yes, correct. The Sailor Who Fell from Grace and then Life or So.
It's true.
Also coming up. So, yeah. More Mishima to come.
More Mishima.
He's an awesome author. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, great fiction. Confessions of a Mask is one of my favorite books of all time. I remember the first time I read it and I was like, whoa, like... Fiction is not just like Lord of the Rings, Percy Jackson, like Harry Potter, whatever, like Warrior Cats. Like fiction can be like really cool and like based in like the real world and really deep and unsettling but relatable at times. And so that's why I really like learned to love Mishima when I was, you know, not younger, but like I guess technically younger, like a couple years back now.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think Mishima is my favorite author of all time. Confessions of a Mask is also one of my favorite books. I also read it when I was younger, a mere child. I don't know. I think I was like 16, actually, when I read
it. I think I was like 18 or 19 when I read Mishima for the first time.
I think I was a junior in high school.
Okay.
But yeah. I don't. That's like 16, 17, something like that.
I was 16 when I was a junior in high school.
Yeah.
Oh, but you're old for your age, huh?
Yeah, but I don't. Year. Yeah, but the thing is, my birthday's in. Sorry, this is random. My birthday's in December.
Yeah.
So I don't really turn that age until like, it's weird.
Second
so like,
half.
Most of the year I was probably 16, and then
you're kind
of
16.
I mean?
You're 2 year, like two ages, for an entirety of a school year.
Yeah.
For me, it's pretty convenient because I'm like, end of August. That's when I turn. So it's like that entire school year, I'm that age.
Yeah. No, it's really weird.
Yeah, because then when you think about like how old you were at a certain time, it's like two ages.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, shout out December birthdays. Low-key, worst month to have a birthday, but you know.
You think so?
Yeah, this has nothing to do with Mishima, but I genuinely...
Like Christmas having a stuff?
I think it's just a terrible time. At least for me, I don't enjoy having a December birthday.
I never really liked having an August birthday, I'm going to be honest.
I feel like summer birthdays low-key fire.
No.
Really?
No, because everyone's busy. It's like, oh, do I have my little birthday party right after school starts? Everyone's like focused on school. Do I have it during the summer? A lot of people are out of town. There's never really like a, you know, locked in type situation.
I never had birthday parties growing up, so that was never like a issue for me.
I'm not really someone who likes throwing a birthday party for myself. I love the idea of a surprise birthday party.
Really?
No, I do, but I would never throw one for myself because that seems vain. I like surprise birthday parties in that it's like someone loves you enough to make this effort for you, right? But I would not do that for myself. I have no, like, I'm not one to celebrate my own birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do not like surprises, so I would not enjoy a surprise birthday party.
Dude, what? Surprises are awesome.
I think it depends. I don't know. I'm not really...
Yeah, I'd like to reference page 27 of Sun and Steel where Mishima says, I love surprise birthday parties.
No, like, sorry, we're not talking about Mishima, but listen.
No, we're a little derailed. It's okay. It's a public
The book is really short anyways.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
there's honestly
we'll
not much to talk about. Yeah, anyways. No, I don't like surprises. I don't like not knowing things, especially when it pertains to me. Like, my mom... Okay, shout out my mom. Sorry, this is really random.
Shout out your mom.
This past year, my mom threw me a surprise birthday party, and it was genuinely my worst nightmare. Like, I was at my grandma's house, and then they're like, oh, they were being really weird. And I was like, oh, my God, I know exactly what this is. I know exactly what's happening. And she... So I go to her house, and she stopped. It was really awkward, and she was like... She was trying to get me to go inside, and I was like, I do not want to go in there right now, because I knew what it was going to be. And so I walked in, and then, like, a bunch of my family was there, and they're like, it was crazy. I had no reaction, by the way. Like, I was just stone-faced the entire time.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was really bad. It was really bad.
They all probably felt bad, like, oh, you didn't appreciate her birthday party.
No, my family already knows I'm weird.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I just, like, don't ever have reactions to things. Like, for like Christmas, I opened a gift, like, there's no reaction there, you know what I mean?
I feel like when I gave you your birthday gift, you were pretty emotive.
That's because it was Luffy. It was a Luffy figurine.
Yeah.
No, I will preface with, my family doesn't know me very well at all.
Oh, okay, got you.
So when they give me gifts or things, I'm never very happy about it, you know?
Yeah. Every year my folks are like, hey, what do you want for your birthday? And I'm just like, I have everything in my life that I could ever want.
Yeah, every time...
Like, if you can't figure it out on your own, then I'm not telling you.
No, every time people ask me, I'm like, I don't really want anything.
Yeah, fair enough.
For my birthday, though, and Christmas now, my mom asked me to give her a specific thing, and then, so it's never a surprise anymore. She just gives me, like, one thing, and I'm like, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, no, hate surprises, not a fan at all.
I've realized during this conversation, I've never had a surprise birthday party, so I actually don't know if I would like it. I just think, in my head, yeah. I think I would like it.
It's just, I don't know, like, I feel like a lot of the times I'm really, like, reactionless, if that makes sense. So then I know it's going to be awkward, you know? So, like, when that surprise birthday happened, I was like, oh my God.
Like, bruh.
And it was just a bunch of people that I'm related to that, like, don't know me well at all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, my brother's, like, girlfriend's, like, sisters were there. It was really weird. Like, I didn't even know half the people that were there. I was like... This is terrible.
Yeah, how are you gonna throw a birthday party for someone it's not even like
I was like, why are these people here? It was too much for me.
I would get annoyed by that. I wouldn't like that.
Yeah, I didn't have fun. It was Brazil themed, I will say though.
Yeah. Unless it's like
food.
If it's like your friend who is like, you know, attending the birthday party and they can't go without bringing their like significant other, like okay. But like your brother's friend's girlfriend? Is that what you said?
No, my brother's girlfriend's sister and like her mom.
Okay, see,
was there.
It makes no sense for those
people.
Yeah,
that
to
was
be
the
there.
First time I'd ever met those people in my life.
Like they
I
have
do
no
not,
reason to be there.
Yeah, yeah. And like, my family lives in Texas, right? Yeah. I don't have like, I'm not like friends with anybody I used to be friends with when I lived there in like middle school, except for like one person. So I didn't know any, like, the only people there were, like I said, my family and my brother's girlfriend's family. I don't know, it was really weird.
Strange.
It was very strange, very weird. And then I sat on the stairs the entire time while everybody was like, you know,
having fun.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's like, wow, this is really terrible. Yeah.
That sucks.
Anyways, yeah.
Let's talk
no
about
surprise.
This,
let's talk about Mishima.
Book.
Let's talk about this book. Yeah, no, we read Sun and Steel by Yukio Mishima this week. I just want to say, not a fan of it, honestly. I enjoy kind of the way it was written, if that, like, I kind of enjoy the way it was. Like, things are described, but I did not enjoy the content of it, really. Definitely my least favorite Mishima work, I will say.
Maybe let's illuminate what, like, the way it's written is.
Okay, yeah. Oh, actually, I feel like we should... I wanted to, like, provide context on who Yukio Mishima is, because I feel like if you're reading this book and you don't know anything about him, it's like, what is this guy on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, knowing about Mishima, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, so Yukio Mishima, he was an author, wrote a lot of fire books like post World War II. He's considered like one of the most like prolific and important Japanese authors in the 20th century. Super interesting guy. Also, he like, it's not, what's the word, not intern, but he was a protege, is that the word? For a Nobel Prize winner, Yasunori Kawabata. they had a really weird relationship.
Hmm.
And notably, he stole Mishima's Nobel Peace Prize, or Nobel Prize, not Nobel Peace Prize, sorry.
Hmm.
I always say Nobel Peace. Anyways, but yeah, no, super interesting guy. He, like, how do I explain this? A lot of his works kind of focus on, like eroticism, beauty, and, like,
Death.
Like,
very heavily.
He was super, super obsessed with death and the body. So a lot of his works, like, he'll mention or talk about, he'll kind of incorporate some of those elements into, like, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, the body, and we can kind of see that in Sun and Steel, because that's, like, literally what the entire book's kind of about. But yeah, Yukio Mishima, interesting guy. He also was super, super, like, anti-Western, what's the word? He was anti-West, like, he didn't want any Western influence in Japan, even though Yukio Mishima, I feel like he led a pretty, like, Western lifestyle. He, like in his private life, at least, like, he was really kind of hypocritical in that way. But yeah, super anti-West.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean?
Like, he practiced a Western lifestyle.
So, like, he really didn't, like, he wasn't really super, like, I don't really know how to explain this. He wasn't super, like,
religious?
Not religious, but, like, a lot of the things he did, like, he wore Western clothes, like, he, like, bro, you know what I mean? Like, it's not...
Yeah.
He, like, tried to make it seem as though, like, he wanted... he would say that he wanted Japan to go back to, like, pre-World War II, like, pre-whatever.
Yeah, he had, like, a pretty strong, traditionalist, like, romanticization of Japanese traditionalism. Where he was super obsessed with, like, the way of the samurai and kenjutsu, which is, like, sword.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess, like, sword art or whatever. And he was really into, like, Japan pre...
Yes.
Like, I don't know, Western influence post-World War II.
Yeah.
And, like, he really loved the idea of Imperial Japan.
He did. He was very obsessed with it. I will say, it kind of stems from the fact that his family... kind of, I don't remember exactly, but his family, I think, had some influence pre-World War II, like in Imperial Japan. I can't remember, like, what their title was specifically. I'll look that up later. But, so, I don't know, he became obsessed with, like you said, Imperial Japan and all of that. And he, like, I don't know, he also... I think, like, super important to remember is Mishima grew up super, like, sickly, kind of.
Yeah, he was, like, a weak kid.
Yeah, he was a very weak and sickly kid.
And that's kind of how he got into literature. Like, he wouldn't go out and play and stuff. He would sit inside and read.
Yeah, he would read and write.
He talks about this in Sun and Steel.
He does.
Yeah.
And then in World War II, he kind of had this, like, romanticization of death, and he wanted to die... like, heroically, or he wanted to die, like, doing something. He didn't want to die, like, he considered, like, dying from, like, a disease or something like that, like, kind of, like, weak and, like, not glorious.
Not just that, he also explicitly didn't want to die past his physical peak.
Yeah.
Because to him, he had this obsession with this idea of a beautiful death, and a beautiful death entailed being your most beautiful form. And so to be old and die... would be meaningless because you are ultimately, like, dying at one of your worst points.
Yeah.
But for him, he found it far more glorious to die, like, a warrior's death, even if it's not necessarily in combat, but, like, within the tradition of a warrior, which is, like, how he does die.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, you know, peak physical, like, beauty and condition, because, like, we talked about his weird obsession with the body.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. So he has this, like, weird, like, obsession with dying young and... like you said, in his peak. And so during World War II, he enlists in the military, but he's sickly and weak. Even like, I think he's a teenager at this time, I'm pretty sure, like early 20s or something like that.
17, 18, I think.
Yeah, like he's super young, like he's not old, but he's too like sickly to like actually go out and like fight in the war. So he kind of starts working in a factory. And he starts working, like, on ships and stuff instead. And he mentions this in Sun and Steel, too. But, yeah, so he has that whole obsession with that. And then later on, when he's, like, he's 45, on November 25th, 1970, this is really interesting. He delivered his final copy of one of the final books for his, like, series that he had called The Sea of Fertility, and he delivered it to his publisher on November 25th, 1970, and then immediately after that, he went and basically tried to, like, start a coup.
Yeah, so him and a couple others, yeah. like, sieged a military base in Tokyo. Yeah.
So the people that went with him, he had, like, this, for some, okay, he got really obsessed with, like, Japanese, like, fencing, it's called kendo, and some other stuff. And so he formed, like, a sort of... Oh, the background music just died. Stop. He formed, like, a sort of, like, makeshift, like, army. Like, he called it a school. I forget the name. It's, like... I don't remember the name. And it had, like, around 80 students, quote-unquote. And so the him and, like, people from that school that he, like, was kind of leading, they're the ones who went and, like, tried to basically start the coup or whatever. And obviously, he gave, like, a whole speech.
He, like, went out to the roof of the thing and yelled to the people down below the military base, like, guys, we should do this.
Yeah, he wanted them to overthrow the, or get rid of the new Japanese constitution. And they all kind of, like, their whole thing was, like, they wanted to bring back the emperor.
Yeah.
And not just, like, the idea of the emperor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And get rid of whatever, because they didn't like the Western influence on Japan. And obviously nobody listened to him.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, this guy is weird. And so he went, like, he just, like, left and went inside, and then he committed seppuku. So he stabbed himself in the abdomen, along with this other guy who people think was, like, his boyfriend.
Someone stands behind you and cuts off your head.
Yeah, so he kills himself, and then they cut off his head. And it's him and the other guy, I forget his name, who's rumored to be, like, his lover or something.
Was his wife there?
No.
Really? I've heard iterations of this where he does it in front of his wife.
No, it's him and this guy who is a student, but people think they had something going on, you know?
Gotcha.
Because Mishima, even though he had a wife and a child...
He was gay.
He was gay. It's quite obvious, and... especially in Confessions of a Mask, because it's basically like an autobiography.
Yeah. But with different names.
Yeah.
No, he was a gay man, for sure.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy that he was putting out these books at such a social climate, but like, maybe it's because he was like, it's fiction. That's not me. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he dies. They decapitate him. And that's the end of Mishima. It's really interesting. But Sun and Steel is written 2 years before he does this.
Yeah, he was like 42 or 43 when he wrote this, and then 45 when he died.
Yeah. But yeah, Sun and Steel, it's super short. It's only, I think, like, my copy's only like a, we have two different copies or versions.
Yeah, you have an older.
I have an older one. Yeah, mine is only 88 pages without the epilogue.
Mine is without the epilogue?
Yeah.
Okay, what is mine?
But also,
my pages are longer. But my text is probably bigger. Mine is also 88 pages.
Oh, okay. Nice.
About the epilogue.
Yeah.
And so I think mine is probably just like they screen, like, copied every single page onto mine.
Yeah.
But just enlarged it.
It's super short. I didn't enjoy it at all while reading it, honestly. I think, honestly, it was kind of, it's really confusing too, because. The words I feel like the language he's using is really weird. And I was mentioning to DJ Drainfield, he had a habit of, like, using a lot of kanji that, like, people didn't really know. So he was really pretentious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of, you can see that even in the English translation, because, I'm not a fan of the language, honestly. Sun and Steel, it's basically, I don't know how to explain this. It's like, he's basically talking about, or it's basically a memoir about, or an essay about him and, like, his relationship with his body and his mind. And he kind of describes, so there's the sun and the steel, right? The sun is kind of like, this is like a really weird, like, concept thing he has going on, but the sun is basically like, I guess, like, the body and things that are real, and the steel are, he refers to, like, with, or he uses words as his example, and night and paleness. I feel like this isn't really making any sense.
I think I interpreted it in a far more literal sense. So the sun is because he's, like, becoming physically active. We talked about how he was sickly, stayed inside, and would read a lot. So he, like, talks about in the book this idea of, like, the darkness, and that's being indoors.
Yeah.
And he would say, like, I would, like, engulf myself in the darkness and read and, like, obsess about books. But then it was only after I, like, started embracing the sun, which is just, like, being outside, like, not just being cooped up indoors, like, being physically active. And then the steel is just the weights he's picking up, which he describes.
Yeah, he also, I think you can take it very literally, but I feel like there's also other things.
I'm sure, like, there's, like, a metaphysical level to it.
But I do want to talk about, importantly, how, like you said, he goes from, like, being kind of, like, nocturnal and, like, staying inside at night and writing, and then goes, like, into the sun and, like, kind of changes him. And he refers to this as, like, him changing his race. But he doesn't mean this, like, literally, like, as in, like, oh, he's becoming, like, a different race or something, because he's, like,
he's just tanning.
When he refers to race, he's referring to he's becoming, like, the sun race, if that makes any sense. Like, because he kind of...
He's changing what type of human being he is.
There's, like, two different... I don't know. This is, like, really weird to explain.
In the literal sense, he's saying he is tanning, but in a... like, I guess, metaphorical sense, he's saying that he is now changing from a person that's constantly indoors to someone who's constantly outdoors, and such a shift, like, changes him so much that it's like he became a different race. That's how I interpreted it.
I agree. I don't know. I feel like there's something I want to explain, but I don't really know how to explain my idea to get it across. He talks about shifting races, which I thought was really interesting. And this happens on a ship in Greece, I believe, when he, like, first... Or this is, like, his example that he uses. And because he mentions... Throughout the book, he mentions multiple examples of him doing things and becoming, like... I guess, like... I don't know how to explain it. But, like I said, he talks about how he's on the boat in Greece, and that's the first time he mentions it. He also mentions a second time... but I don't know where in the book he mentions it. Anyways, So I wanted... I feel like my thoughts are all over the place. Do you have anything you want to say?
Yeah, sure. I think something we should hit on is that, like, this book is essentially Mishima's philosophy for working out and its importance to him. And so he articulates, like, human essence as two primary components, that being the mind and body. And he says that people begin to conceptualize their body before they can begin to conceptualize their mind. He feels as though he did it in the opposite order, in which he conceptualized his mind before he recognized his body, and for a long time viewed his mind as detached from his body, but then later came to realize that by working out and perfecting his body, like how he did with his mind by reading and writing and obsessing over literature, he is, like, achieving a greater level of perfection, because the limits by which one's mind can be great is confined by the state of one's body, and likewise, the state of one's mind affects how great one's body can be. And so he articulates this perfection or perfected form of human in which mind and body must improve in tandem. And that's kind of part of his philosophy for why he loves working out and why he went from a Holden bookworm to a gym rat, I suppose.
Mishima's a gym rat. I don't know. I think I wrote on this paper, but honestly, I don't know. I feel like my ideas were, like, a little crazy on here. There's a quote that I wrote down from the book, and it's to change the silence of death into the eloquence of life. The aid of the steel was essential. He starts working out, changes his life, you know. He's not a nerd anymore. He's crazy. He does... Okay, something I wanted to talk about, I kind of mentioned this before, but I didn't really, like, explain it, is when he talks about words, and he says that, like, words are corrosive, he, like, how do I explain this? He talks about how he relies on, like, words and stuff like that, and, like you said, he learned, like, his mind first before, like, mm-hmm. his body, but then later on, because of, like, you know, sun and steel, he no longer has to rely on just the words to, like, get him by, if that makes sense. Or he doesn't need to dwell in the nocturnal world of words.
The nocturnal world of words being inside and reading.
Yeah, at night. Yeah. Don't know. I feel like I said, this book was really short.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think it could have been even shorter.
Yeah.
I think he kind of just drags stuff out and, like, has a bunch of random, like, stories, which, I guess they relate to what he's talking about. But, like I said, I feel like it could have been a lot shorter than it was. And I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the language or anything like that.
He certainly insists upon himself at various points.
Yeah. I just felt like a lot of the same thing being said over mm-hmm. and over again, which is, I don't know.
I think the format of the book is pretty cool, where it's initially an essay, and then the epilogue mm-hmm. is like a narrative, and then it closes with a poem. And he talks about it in the beginning, where he's like, I'm not really sure how to format this, because it's not split up by chapters, it's mm-hmm. not split up by any type of section, it's just him putting his thoughts out on paper. I just feel like, I don't know, it seems like a bit much at certain points. Like, he definitely comes off very pretentious. And I think it reads in a lot of ways as, like, the manifesto of a very troubled and somewhat, like, deluded man. And I think that something of note is that, like, there is sort of a toxic masculinity angle to this, with respect to his philosophy of, like, exercise and his obsession with the body. And it is very much, like, there's a lot of, like, I guess, implicit body shaming throughout this, where it's like, if you don't have this, like, super muscular body, it's, like, repulsive to Mishima. And I also think that something, this is before I read Sun and Steel, I was just reading someone talking about it when I first read Confessions of a Mask by Mishima, and they talk about, like, how he was obsessed with working out, and, like, the interpretation that it could be, like, compensatory for him, like, trying to justify his masculinity to himself in the face of being gay. But all things considered, I think it comes off, it's like a very weird book. I love a lot of Mishima's work. I can't say I love this one.
Yeah, like I said, definitely my least favorite Mishima. I think should have just stuck to literature, to be honest.
Oh, this is literature.
Fiction, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? We're going to be reading more Mishima in the coming weeks.
There will be more Mishima, and it'll be probably better.
Yeah, and it'll be a lot better. His books are weird too, but like, they're fire.
Yeah, like, he can create some interesting stories.
Yeah, Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea is gonna be really crazy.
You've read that one already?
Yeah. Okay. I've read all Mishima's books already.
Oh wow. Well, yeah, so that's our time.
Oh, we'll see you next week. What are we reading next week?
Socialism, Utopian, and Scientific by Friedrich Engels.
Wow.
Big switch up.
Crazy, crazy read.
Yep.
Stay tuned for that if you'd like. I'm Micah.
I'm DJ Drainfield. Up next is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Feel free to stay tuned.
Bye.
Bye.
Look out now. This is the Diz. Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow! This is the Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Someone cue the theme music. There it is. Welcome to your favorite poetry and technology program. It airs every Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock Pacific Time on KDVS. KDVS is one of those old school, old-timey radio shows where the DJs get to pick the music that they want to share. It's not pre-programmed by some artificial intelligence, by some bureaucrat in a tall tower in a faraway city. No. Actual working Davisites, denizens of Yolo County, people who have made certain geographic commitments to the Central Valley of California, delve deep into the basement of Freeborn Hall, the once proud building found at the University of California, Davis, where for 50 years, KDVS DJs of all sorts have presented to you independent, original, and distinctive takes on the world of culture. Much of that has been musical, but not exclusively. For instance, this is a public affairs program where every Wednesday afternoon at 5 and via a podcast that you can download at your convenience, just Google Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, you will find interviews with poets and pundits, prognosticators, people who care about creativity, people who are on the edge of doing something great, or who are enjoying the echoes of having done something great, or are about to do something great. And guess what? You're invited not only to listen in, but to attend an event. And oh, we'll be plugging some events today. For instance,